October, 1862. Autumn was rolling into the Ohio countryside as swiftly as Confederate rebels. The air was crisp and cool, and the leaves had begun their yellowing descent as they lightly carpeted the earth. It had been a long but routine day for Elizabeth. She had spent the day caring for her three children, chasing after the chickens, feeding the animals. She swept the porch, mopped the floors, and turned the horses out in the late afternoon. While the children sat quietly reading and cross-stitching, Elizabeth took to the garden, watering can in hand, and began tending to her carrots and squash. As she stood in the garden, she gazed across the property at her husband, Jacob, and his friend, Mr. Becker. The two men were chopping wood and chatting. Reels of low laughter periodically rolled from the pair, and Elizabeth smiled. As the country descended into civil war, moments like this were precious. In the distance, Elizabeth could see a group of horses approaching the farm. Clouds of dust followed them. Jacob and Mr. Becker noticed the visitors as well and hoisted their axes high over their shoulders. A group of men, dressed as Union soldiers, approached the pair.
"Evening, gentlemen,"
a man said as he slid off his horse.
"Evening," replied a wary Jacob. "We're just out on patrol, making sure everyone's good and safe. The name's Todd. George Todd."
The man outstretched a weather-beaten hand and soon let it fall as Jacob and Mr. Becker stood stoic, not returning the salutation. As Elizabeth looked on between stalks of climbing beans, a chill fell down her spine. Something wasn't right.
"Now, whose homestead is this?"
"This is my farm," Jacob replied as he straightened up stiffly. "The name's Jacob Stiles."
"You housing any soldiers here, Mr. Stiles?"
"No, just my family."
"No Confederate men?"
George Todd raised an eyebrow with incredulity.
"No."
"Tell me, Mr. Stiles, where do your politics lie?"
"I'm a Union man," Jacob proudly responded, his hands clutching his axe, knuckles white with fear and preparation.
"Oh, Mr. Stiles, that was in fact the wrong answer."
In one swift and merciless motion, George Todd raised his rifle and shot Jacob and Mr. Becker. Elizabeth muffled a scream as she watched her beloved husband and friend fall to the floor. To add insult to injury, another one of the horsemen, a man Elizabeth recognized as a former neighbor, slid off his horse and went to Jacob's now lifeless body. For a moment, Elizabeth thought there could be hope. Perhaps he would save Jacob. Yet all hope was soon dashed as the man placed his filthy, mud-crusted boot on Jacob's chest, shoved the iron muzzle of his gun into Jacob's gaping mouth, and pulled the trigger. As Elizabeth watched on in horror, a new sensation washed over her. She needed to protect her children. Quickly, she hitched up her skirts and ran towards the house. The group of men spotting her as she fled up the porch stairs. Elizabeth slammed and bolted the doors, screaming at her children to hide. Heavy boots came stomping up the steps, and with great force, the front door was forced open. The men piled into the home, brandishing guns and ill intentions. Elizabeth was grabbed by her hair and thrown to the floor. A tall man, covered in dust and spots of her own husband's blood, pulled out his revolver and held it up to her head, the cool metal of the barrel kissing her temple.
"Filthy Union sympathizers,"
the man spit as he cocked back the hammer of the gun. These men were Confederates in disguise. Quantrill's raiders, to be precise. A band of ruthless rebels that were tearing through Ohio with the speed and ferocity of wildfire.
As Elizabeth sat curled up on the floor, tears streaming, body shaking, she could feel her children's eyes upon her from their hiding spots.
"Step aside, Todd,"
a low, gruff voice called out. The man looked Elizabeth deep in the eyes before lowering his gun and stepping back. Into the room came a tall, slim, young man, Charles Quantrill himself, the leader of the Confederate guerrilla group. He stooped down and lifted Elizabeth's chin.
"Let her live. She's too pretty to die."
Roughly, he dropped Elizabeth's face as silent tears streamed down her cheeks. As Elizabeth watched the men file out of her home, she made a promise to herself to use this gift of life to continue to unashamedly and proudly support the Union forces. For hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. Do you ever lie awake in bed at night and wonder, what is happening in the West London Witch Patreon? Are you plagued by the feeling that you're missing out? Do you want more content and a sneaky look into the inner workings of the West London Witch? Well, I just wanted to pop in and say that joining Patreon is super easy and affordable. I am very aware that we are deep in a cost of living crisis. So for as little as $1, €1, £1 a month, you can unlock the entire West London Witch Patreon and gain access to loads of additional content that you will never experience here on the main show. Patreon is a place where I share extra special interviews, behind-the-scenes stories and gossip, and answer your questions. And in return, you're also helping support the show as we work to share with you the best storytelling at the highest studio quality. So come join us at patreon.com/ The West London Witch. Hello and welcome to episode 67 of The West London Witch, a podcast where we share stories about those moments where we find ourselves very much not alone. One of the beautiful elements of the internet is that it has the ability to expose us to new places and adventures. One of my favorite Instagram accounts, The Ghoul Guide, allows me to follow Courtney as she explores a variety of weird and wonderful haunted locations. I love being able to glimpse inside haunted hotspots that I wouldn't otherwise have access to. Courtney has traveled extensively, but there is one location that haunts her to this very day. I'm Rebecca Strazina, and this is The West London Witch, Episode 67, Madison Seminary.
All right, so where I'm going to begin in this, it was really this kind of the perfect closing to what was the first season of The Ghoul Guide. Back in November 2021, I had the chance to kind of start helping my friends out with their event company, where we rent out places and we give you the chance to investigate with us.
Courtney runs an extremely successful TikTok and Instagram account under the handle The Ghoul Guide. She takes her followers along with her during her travels and investigations and shares evidence, photos, and haunted travel recommendations on her page.
Back in November 2021, I had been investigating with a group of friends running an event for his company. We were doing an event in Ohio at a place called the Madison Seminary in Madison, Ohio. And this is a location that has seen many, many eras of its life.
Madison Seminary is a beautiful and vast brick building situated in the tiny and picturesque village of Madison, Ohio. Originally, the seminary began as a humble timber-framed schoolhouse in 1847. The goal was for secondary school or college-age students to attend the seminary for higher education. However, as attendance grew, the school also needed to evolve in order to house and educate more students. In 1859, a large and striking brick building was added to the smaller wooden schoolhouse. This addition was now able to provide housing for up to 150 students. But that wasn't the last change the seminary would see. By the late 1800s, public education was more readily accessible, so there was less of a need for a privately funded seminary. In 1891, the seminary was purchased by the Ohio's Women's Relief Corps with the goal of providing housing and support to Civil War Army nurses and family members who had been left destitute or destroyed by the war. The seminary was renamed Madison Home and once again saw another remodel as a new wing was added to the western side. Sadly, by the early 1900s, the Women's Relief Corps had run out of funds to support and operate the home, so they donated the building to the state of Ohio. It then took on its third name, the Home for Ohio Soldiers. In 1962, the home was transferred to the Ohio Department of Mental Hygiene and Corrections. The building went from being a sanctuary for widows, mothers, and children to a center for mentally disabled women and psychiatric patients. This was a dark time for the building, and by 1993, the home was once again emptied and ownership passed into private hands. This probably saved the building, and it is now a part of the National Register for Historic Places. Although the building now sits empty, it is full of reported hauntings that link back to its prior lives.
It kind of became Ohio, like Madison, Ohio's boogeyman. No one really wanted to talk about it. There has been a lot of stories of women up in the asylum area, and mainly people have been driving by and they would see them hanging out of the small little windows, just waving at the passing cars. So everyone pretty much in the asylum was rarely seen and very rarely spoken about. So the asylum area carries a very tragic place.
There are numerous reports of ghostly activity connected to the property. And these stories are so incredible, they have even caught the attention of TV shows like Destination Fear and America's Most Haunted.
So there has been various reportings of a lot of shadow figures, full body apparitions, disembodied voices, and footsteps throughout the entire building. There has also been an urban legend. There's various stories of it. A lot of people don't really talk about it. It's kind of taboo. Apparently, there is a woman buried in the ground in one of the rooms near the laundry room. The way Adam Kimmel, who is the owner, says that when he heard this legend, he kind of went throughout the basement and tried to see where this could all actually be true. And there was one room around, I think it's on like the left-hand side, like across from the laundry room, where the floor has been, you know, like patched up, where like the concrete's been broken. So he kind of wondered if that was that room. And then a couple years ago, when Ghost Hunters was rebooted with Grant and his new team, they actually came out to the seminary and they did the ground penetrating radar and they looked up at the, or they looked the ground up. They had cadaver dogs come in. They actually hid. So they tore up the ground, but they couldn't find anything. So the story with this is that she was either a paraprofessional, she was helping out, or she was one of the prisoners, or, you know, she was just someone working in the building. And two men either had their way with her, you know, kind of roughed her up, and they ended up getting rid of her by burying her in the ground and under the concrete.
A rather notable resident, who we do know for a fact did live and die at Madison Seminary, is Elizabeth Stiles. Elizabeth and her husband had strong pro-Union sentiments. Ohio was a politically divided state, so being vocally and visibly supportive of the Union was dangerous. One evening, a group of Quantrill raiders showed up at the Stiles home and killed Elizabeth's husband, Jacob, in cold blood. This did not stop Elizabeth from her quest to support the North. A few months after the murder of Jacob Stiles, Elizabeth was recruited by Abraham Lincoln to act as a spy for the North. Elizabeth would pose as a nurse and infiltrate Confederate hospitals. However, her favorite disguise was to dress up as an old Southern grandmother on the hunt for her son, a lost Confederate soldier. Her own daughter, Clara, would accompany her mother in this ruse as her granddaughter. Once, she was even arrested by a Confederate general by the name of Sterling Price. He accused Elizabeth of espionage. However, this incredible woman was able to convince Price that she was actually a rebel spy. It is reported that she was so convincing that Price sent her on her way with a horse, a gun, and laden with provisions. In 1864, Elizabeth's cover had been exposed, and she retired from her 007 days. In 1895, she moved into the Madison home where she remained until her death in 1898. Paranormal investigators and mediums still report seeing and interacting with Elizabeth. She is said to appear as an apparition clad in Civil War dress.
Up in the asylum is pretty much their paranormal hotspot. It is one of the places that kind of has seen the most tragedy. This is where they housed a lot of the women, you know, who really couldn't take care of themselves, you know, who had mental illness, who were disabled. They kind of just threw them up there so they would be out of sight, out of mind. And if you ever go to Madison Seminary and you see the way the rec room, the big area is. And then it looks like there's this fake wall. It kind of looks like they put it there so they could hide all the patient rooms and everything that was going on in the hallway. It's been said that in that room, there has been a lot of like botched and forced abortions. Just a lot of things happening against the patient's wills. And just a lot of like a lot of mistreatment happening there. So that's very like a sad area, but you will see and you will hear a lot of things happening, like wheelchairs rolling across the floor. You'll hear footsteps, sometimes chimes, objects moving. This place kind of has it all. And you kind of just have to like sit and listen and they'll come find you.
A building this old and with such a diverse history, it is bound to have an atmosphere. But are all these stories of ghosts just myths and legends? Or is the seminary truly spirited?
So back in November, we were closing out the season and we had just did an investigation at Fairfield about a couple hours away. And this was our very last chance. We would all kind of be together before the winter came and we all kind of went our separate ways to hibernate. We spent the night just going around. It was the typical event. We ghost hunted. We shared our space with the ghosts and we showed other people what Madison Seminary really is and how scary this place actually can be. Back in 2021, I had only been to Madison probably about like three times before this, and I've only investigated it about twice. So I didn't really think anything of it. I knew it was a scary place. I've heard a lot of stories coming out of it, but I never really had that one ghost story to like really shake me to my core here. And that's kind of what I wanted. So around 4 o'clock in the morning, we ended the event. We said goodbye to our friends. A few friends went over to a hotel, and a handful of us decided to actually sleep in the seminary. We were in the lobby. It was freezing cold. I don't even know why we did it, but it was just a spur of the moment type of thing. And everything seemed well. We closed out our event, and you know, we packed up, and we realized that we were missing a piece of equipment. So all of us being exhausted, and it nearing about 6 a.m. now, after just talking with friends, we were just like, you know what, we'll find it in the daytime, mainly because it's a little black box and we are just gonna roam around looking for absolutely nothing. So I laid down on my cot, and I remember looking out the window, and I could just barely see the sun coming up. And in that moment, I was like, you know, this is a really, really great way to end this season. It was an unexpected journey that I found myself on. And I don't really know what's to come, but I'm very excited. And I wanted to be with Madison more. It was a building that kind of just grew on me. And I didn't know how connected I would be to it until a couple hours later.
After falling asleep for a few hours as the sun rose, the next day brought more activity than the ghost hunt the night before.
Probably about like an hour and a half of little to no sleep, we wake up and, you know, we start kind of cleaning up and shuffling our feet, knowing that we don't want to leave each other. So a group of friends come back, and we were all talking about how we lost a piece of equipment. And since it was a big spot, we decided to break off into a little group.
The building is so massive, the team split up to search for the missing gear. Courtney and two friends began searching room to room in the oldest part of the building. The equipment was nowhere to be seen, but the seminary felt electric.
There was still like an eerie vibe, as if someone was following us. That spot has given us so many, many EVPs that we've captured, such as someone yelling that they came from the mirror. We've seen shadow figures. That spot just isn't my spot to be in. So we all kind of like looked around the rooms and just skedaddled really fast. And while our two friends were breaking down merch and, you know, getting their car packed up, we decided to go over to the Ohio Cottage side, which is the four-story building, and it holds the asylum. And it's really like the schoolhouse era to the building. There were three floors. We decided to go floor by floor. Each of us take a floor. I decided to take the second, and I took this as my way of getting like B-roll for the winter. It was gonna be our last time there. We were in the morning light. I was okay to go off alone. Normally I hate going off alone, but in that moment, I felt okay because I knew my friends were directly above me. And we started walking floor by floor. And as I was on the second, my friend Deanna was on the third, and her husband was in the asylum on the fourth. And as we were walking, I could hear her walking above me. So I was like, okay, they're still up there. And then the footprints got a little quieter, and I just assumed that she was on the other side of the building. And after I did my little wraparound and got the photos and videos that I wanted, I moved up to the third. She wasn't there. As I walked around again, I was like, all right, it's fine. It's cool. She's probably just up in the asylum with her husband, because I could still hear footsteps up walking around on the hardwood floors, just in this big, empty attic area. And I was like, okay, that's fine. I'll do what I need to do, and I'll get my stuff. So I decided to, you know, take some videos and stuff. And as I was taking a video, I could hear what sounded like a door shut above me. So I was like, oh, they have to be up there.
Although the building had a creepy energy to it, Courtney was emboldened by the knowledge that her friends were on the floors above her.
So probably about like 5-10 minutes go by, and, you know, it's still trying to do like the last minute shots and whatever. And I hear another door shut. So I was like, what are they doing up there? And like, why can't I hear their voices? I'm just hearing footsteps and all these noises. So I decide to go join them. And on the Ohio Cottage side, there is only one staircase. And due to fire code, they had to make it into a single staircase, and it's very echoey. My friend Mark, God love him, he is a bull in a china shop. So I, like, you will hear him. Like, he has heavy boots, he has heavy footsteps. His voice carries. And then his wife, Deanna, she also had, like, noisy boots, and, like, I could hear her voice. So it's like, if they were around, why can't I hear them? So as I rounded the corner to go into the staircase, I had a Fitbit watch on at the time, and I had gotten a text message from them. So as I'm going through the staircase, my foot is on the first step going up to the fourth floor from the third. And I decide to look at my watch as I was going to go up the stairs. And as I turned my wrist to look at the screen, there's a text message from Deanna popping up that says, "Hey, we're leaving for breakfast. We'll save you a seat." In that moment, I could just feel my stomach sink. I absolutely went silent, and I just kept looking up the staircase that would have led to the asylum where I assumed they were. I was like, maybe they're in a room. Maybe they're up there. Maybe they're just hanging out. I probably stood there silent for at least 2 minutes without a single sound. It was in that moment that I ran down the staircase. I don't think I touched a stair on the way down. I was so freaked out. And I ran back to the base room and I flung open the door. And there they were, standing at the door with their hand on the handle, looking at me going, "Where the hell are you? We're getting ready for breakfast." And I go, "Where were you?" And they're like, "We've been down here for at least 5 minutes."
Courtney was astounded. She had clearly heard someone walking around on the floor above her.
They were like, "No, we've been waiting. Like, we were waiting for you. What was taking you so long?" I was like, "There's someone up in the asylum." Like, when, like, it was just this moment of panic. And then the realization set in where it's like, holy cow, I wasn't listening to my friends at all. I was listening to probably whatever residual energy was up there, or what could have been a spirit from about 2 months prior to that. Because we captured a few EVPs and one of them said, "Come here, I love you."
Check out this EVP that Courtney and her friend Deanna caught together. Was this the spirit luring Courtney up to the upper floor? Check it out and see if you can hear the voice say, "Come here, I love you."
Looking back on that moment, it's kind of just like, who was up there? Who was trying to get me up there? And if I actually did go up there, what would I be walking into, or what would I experience? And it's kind of this ghost story that's haunted me throughout the last 2 years, because I've gone back to Madison and I've had these experiences and I feel very connected to it. But at the end of the day, there's still this question of who the hell was up there and why do they want my attention so bad?
To this day, Courtney doesn't know who or what was going on the upper floors of the building. But this experience certainly increased her interest and love for the historic Madison Seminary.
If you're looking to get scared, this is one of the places that will definitely give you a little fright.
Do you have a spooky story you'd like to share? I'd love to hear it. Drop me an email at thewestlondonwitch@gmail.com or find us on Instagram and Facebook at thewestlondonwitch. If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review. And come and follow us for additional content on Instagram and Facebook. Until next time, merry meet, merry part, and merry meet again. The West London Witch is created by me,
Rebecca Strazina. Our sound designer and production magician is the incredible Danny Cross. Our theme music was bespokely written and performed by the wickedly talented Kyle Hall. Our cover art is the beautiful collaboration between Lizzie Wilson and Jake Bowser. Special thanks to Ms. Sinead Bowers, our quality control and biggest cheerleader. And thank you to you, all of our listeners all over the world. These are your stories. Thank you for sharing them with us.